Welcome to the Pet Loss Companion. I'm Ken Dolan Del Vecchio, and I'm here with my friend and co-author, Nancy Sexton Lopez. And this is a program that we do live on Facebook and YouTube every Thursday from 6 o'clock to about 6:30. And it is an opportunity for us to expand the reach of the work that we started with our book, The Pet Loss Companion, Healing Advice from Family Therapists Who Lead Pet Loss Groups. This broadcast gives us the opportunity to have a dialogue with the audience and not just be sending you information via a book. You can reach me at kenddv@gmail.com. You can reach Nancy at nsaxtonlopez@csmpc.com. That's nsaxtonlopez at csmpc.com. All of this information I'm sharing in the beginning is in the description that accompanies the live broadcast or the replay, wherever you may find it. And you can write to us and tell us a story that it's okay for us to share with others, either on the broadcast or on our Substack post, or you can tell us that you don't want us to share it. We'll write back to you. In either case, you can tell us there are certain things you can share and certain things you can't. That's fine as well. Also, you can suggest guests. You can suggest yourself as a guest. You can suggest topics as well. If you'd like to read our email correspondence, we now have a Substack post where we put all of our correspondence with our audience members who have shared with us and have okayed us sharing, and also all of the photographs, the beautiful photographs that they send to us. This is one of the ways that you can support us, actually, is to subscribe on the Substack, because there's a small fee. It's $5 a month to be a subscriber. And you can also support our program in a number of other ways, through Venmo, through PayPal, through a monthly subscription on Spotify. All of the above are in the program description. We'd like you to know that this program is a friend of Dakin Humane Society in Springfield, Massachusetts. Dakin does a lot of stuff that is helpful to human beings and the connection that we have to our animal family members. And one of the programs that they sponsor is a cost-free Zoom pet loss support group that I facilitate, and I do it on the second Tuesday of the month. It runs from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, and the next one is going to be May 14th, and there's an RSVP link in the program description if you are interested in joining. And again, I'll tell you, it's cost-free. It is attended by people from all over the world, all over the country, and all over the world as well, and it's a very interesting mix of experiences and perspectives mm-hmm. that are shared. And if you'd like to join us, please consider clicking on the RSVP as soon as possible, because mm-hmm. we have to cap the attendance, because it tends to be very well attended. Please consider subscribing on YouTube. We are just short of 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. And when we get to 1,000, we get the tiniest bit of ad revenue. But we would appreciate it if you subscribe.
Please.
So okay. Please think about doing that if you think this program is valuable, because one of the real reason for subscribing is that it makes the program more visible to people who are searching for support. And many people have told us that they've found the program by going to YouTube and then looking for pet loss support, and our broadcast comes up. So please consider subscribing if you think that this program is helpful. And finally, we'd like to alert you to the fact that we have an affiliate relationship with a business called Bereave. Bereave creates these really well-crafted granite plaque that is just really a wonderful thing. If you'd like it to be placed at a memorial spot outside, at a gravesite, or at perhaps a memorial garden, or maybe at a place where you keep mementos of your beloved animal companion inside, and to make sure that this was actually something that was going to be really valuable and of good, strong constitution, we asked for a sample, and they gave us one, and it really is
beautiful,
large and heavy. If you purchase a plaque, you will also be giving some measure of support to our program, to us, to help with the costs of delivering the program. And so I just want to say from the beginning, we are sharing just one story tonight because it's so rich There's so much content, and we want to tell you that we're only able to share a little bit of it. So it's going to be edited, even though it's going to take up the whole broadcast. The whole email, and then the series of emails that we've had with Chandra, who is the person who sent this to us, is on the Substack. So there's a lot more to this, and really lots of insightful and helpful thoughts and recommendations from Chandra that may benefit many people. But we can only share a snippet of it. That's because right. Because she gave us so much to work with.
A lot of content, but thoughtful, deep, resonating, emotional. So we're going to start because we did have quite a time, and I'm sorry, I'm in a different place tonight. My upstairs was too hot, so a little kind of adjusting here. But so I'm going to start, and then Ken's going to come in. Dear Ken and Nancy, there was never a more unusual, empathic, absurd, expressive, or affectionate Chihuahua mix in the history of Chihuahua mixes than my baby girl, QWERTY. There just wasn't, and this letter will put any dispute about it to rest. The night she came into my life, we were unprepared. Along with five other small dogs and a couple of cats, she landed at the pet rescue I was working at in Seattle, when only hours earlier we had an emergency intake of 10 dogs rescued from a hoarding situation. When I let her out of her crate, she beelined straight to me, her body low to the ground as she wagged, eager to be scooped up and held close. As the rescue was out of kennel spaces to accommodate the hoarding dogs, I volunteered to foster her that night, just as a temporary thing until we figured out a long-term solution. She was called Wasabi by the California High Kill Shelter we transferred her from. Our rescue had renamed her Twiggy while she was being fostered in California until she was transferred to us. In short time, I foster failed with my first and only foster attempt, and she was forever known thereafter as QWERTY, as in QWERTY keyboard, which we all type on every day from texts to emails. I wasn't looking for a dog, and the timing was wrong in every way, but how could I resist her sweetness, her endless affection? How could I know this little, best guess, three-year-old girl came to me potty trained, crate trained, leash trained, even tempered, quiet, cuddly, easygoing, great on car rides, people-loving, angelic at vet visits, comfortable with being bathed in the kitchen sink, free of bad dog habits like eating poo, chewing up furniture, digging through trash, barking at everything. No judgment, just saying. Instead, she came fully loaded with kisses, happy fits, and an emotional intelligence so developed, I haven't seen it in most humans. I hit the jackpot when it comes to rescue dogs. She was perfect in every way. She came to me with a mysterious past, presumably at least several years of belonging to someone else before she wound up at the kill shelter. I don't know why she was surrendered, but she clearly had a human because she was wonderful with people and showed prior training. One thing I do know is that her tail had a permanent kink in it that made it curl like a pigtail and made her wags even cuter. But we always suspected it was from an old injury that just didn't heal right. I don't know what her life was like, except that she was terrified of the sound of laundry being shaken out as it's folded. The snapping of a towel made her shake and cower. I took care to avoid this and other things that frightened her, which due to her strong and resilient little spirit were thankfully very few. She was amazing at withstanding stressful situations without complaint, often acting as my support without concern for herself. She was stronger and better at coping than I was much of the time. Towards the end of her life, her smallness was a benefit, allowing me to carry her during her walks when she would quickly tire out. We continued our walks as before, but in my arms for most of the way. She didn't mind it one bit, leaning back to feel the sun on her face, her snoot twitching to gather all the information floating in the breeze. We stopped a lot to enjoy the warm light and fresh air, not rushing the journey. When she came into my life, my marriage to my college sweetheart was ending. We were still best friends, but going separate ways. QWERTY made herself indispensable during this period as I struggled with the expensive and stressful separation and the overpowering loneliness that followed. I brought her to work with me every day at the rescue, and any time outside my van was devoted to her. We were the center of each other's worlds. Neither of us knew that on top of my divorce and financial ruin, I was living with an undiagnosed and untreated mental health disorder. When it all really got up on top of me, she was the reason to keep going. When I couldn't find the way to love myself, I always loved her. That was enough to get me through that painful time. Less than a year later, I met the man who would eventually be her papa, who had two female dogs of his own, both raised from puppies, Charlie, his German Shepherd Akita mix, and Georgie, a Chihuahua Terrier mix. Being the smallest and having done time in dog jail, Cordy was prickly at first with them and let her boundaries be known, but she also couldn't help joining in on the fun of tossing around the ball, sharing turkey neck treats and salmon skins, or piling on the bed for group cuddles. Her papa fell in love with her fast, seeing how special and unique she was, and she repaid him in furious kisses. I love that. Furious kisses, long cuddles, and endless mutual affection. In no time, she made herself his little spoon with regularity, or curled up by his face on the pillow because she was so small enough and determined enough to do so. Her papa and I were together for the next 5 years, during which we moved the girls with us to Nashville and then back to Seattle. Our time in Nashville happened to start only months before the pandemic began, so the majority of our lockdown time was at home with the girls. It was the very best time, as our days were filled with loving the dogs and showering them with attention and fun. We got them a monthly dog treat and toy subscription, and it was especially joyous to open each package and watch them enjoy their gifts. They loved taking advantage of the huge fenced backyard, which was a must for us finding our ideal home. They loved playing yard guard and barking as a group at the community cats who dared walk our fence line. They romped and rolled, they tumbled, they chased balls and each other. They came in exhausted, only to be spoiled with petting and snacks and impromptu songs we were always singing about them or something they were doing. Our home was filled with so much laughter and love, it hardly seemed real. We found a fear-free veterinarian 40 minutes away that was worth the drive, as we wanted our girls to experience fear-free care. That is what that means, and it was designed by Dr. Marty Becker to minimize the amount of fear and stress an animal experiences during a vet visit, including before, during, and after treatment. As a side note, if any of your listeners are able to seek fear-free care, I highly suggest they consider it. Our regular doctor there was the first one to suspect Cordy had Cushing's disease, as she started showing many of the symptoms like a bloated belly and sudden and permanent hair loss on her tail. We did blood work several times, but the results never showed she had it, and her water intake was normal too. So we were advised to monitor her with regular tests, but otherwise just live our lives normally. We also learned she had a heart murmur, grade 2, but again, we weren't advised that she needed extra supportive care at this stage. Outside of seasonal allergies that made her ears itchy, she had no concerns. Even not knowing for sure how old she was, I was naively confident that we have at least another 10 years, given that Chihuahuas can live up to 18 years. In 2022, we moved back to Seattle so I could take a dream job in a nonprofit providing funds for life-saving veterinary care. We had only been in our home a few months when her papa broke things off with me out of the blue and told me he was moving away. I was beyond devastated, not just at the loss of our sweet little family and our relationship, but also crushed because I had to give up my dream job I had just taken because I wouldn't be able to support myself on that single income alone. Living in Seattle is incredibly expensive and hard to pull off solo for many of my friends and colleagues. In one moment, our world had been shattered, and Cordy and I were losing everything but each other. Without Cordy, I would have given up many times. She soaked up more of my tears than I could count, absorbed so much of my pain while attending to me. She showed constant concern, approaching me with a tiny paw on my leg or her snoot on my arm, often eagerly trying to kiss my face to make me smile and stop crying. She would make herself available every time. She never wiggled away, rather. She came to me to soothe me. When I needed her most, she didn't turn away from me like so many humans in my life that had broken my heart many times over. Her love lifted me out of despair every time. Her love kept me going. And her love never wavered. There was no pretense with her. We only loved each other as our truest selves, knowing the other would never leave because of growing resentment, contempt, or disenchantment. I didn't have to lie to her to get her to love me. I didn't have to make myself pretty to earn her love. I didn't have to impress her with my band or my job. I didn't have to win her. She just gave herself completely to me as dogs do with their people. Our love wasn't conditional or transactional. It was that rare kind of love that comes from true appreciation, recognition, and acceptance of the other. Every single day I shared with QWERTY, I told her I loved her and thanked her for being my dog. I expressed daily gratitude to her over and over to whatever higher power might be listening. I fell deeper in love with her, and the longer I knew her, which was the best bonus, my fascination with her never ended or diminished, as though every day was the first day I'd brought her home. I continued to marvel at her little body, her tiniest of little tiny eyelashes, her grunts, her scent, her heartbeat. It was like I was trying to make sure I wouldn't forget a single detail. There were so many things to cherish about her. I considered it something as essential as walking her and feeding her to let her know how cherished she was every day. Maybe I thought that if I took the best care of her I could, and if I expressed my gratitude for her every day, that it would protect her from harm. Working in animal rescue and veterinary environments gives you an appreciation for the shortness of a pet's life and some painful truths about the many ways they and their owners can suffer. I'm sad to say that none of those things did much to spare QWERTY from what still feels like an unfair fate, but they did help me in navigating the painful terrain pet owners go through during these immense losses. As a former vet nurse, I used to take extra care assisting during euthanasia procedures and being sensitive and gentle with pets and their people. I'd been on the nurse side of pet losses many times, and as always, I felt so grateful to not be the pet owner in those moments, witnessing their screams and crying and anguish before the inevitable lonely walk out the clinic doors, empty crates swinging sadly with the weightlessness of no beloved pet in it. Those nights after work were the ones where QWERTY would get extra affection and undivided attention, with the extra expressions of gratitude to her for another day of being in my world. The thing is, you know intellectually that death will happen to your pet. I naively decided that when the time finally came after many years together, QWERTY would either peacefully pass away on her own in the night, or she would be euthanized at home, where she could be comfortable after enjoying a bucket list to be all bucket lists, as if I had any control over this. Some luckier pet owners do. While working at the vet clinic, I was offered a totally unexpected career opportunity that I couldn't turn down. It fell into my lap as a friend was leaving his position. It would pay more than any job I'd ever had, with amazing benefits. The only strike against it was having to be away for QWERTY for 10 hours a day, Monday through Friday. Not just being away from her, but leaving her alone in my room. She hadn't been alone for long stretches like that her whole life with me, as I was always able to bring her to work with me at my last several jobs, or I'd work from home during the pandemic. Suddenly, she'd have to suffer approximately 50 hours a week alone. It made me so sad to consider, but I justified the decision as being the best move to ensure I could cover the cost of her future care. About a month into my vet job, QWERTY got her Cushing's confirmation during blood work after working with an internal medicine specialist, so I knew the road ahead would be expensive. She now required daily Vetoryl and would need regular blood work and tests to maintain her health long term. So I took the job and left the vet clinic, and we made the adjustment, and her world got even smaller than before, without the car rides to and from work, without the attention from her mom's coworkers, and without mom herself most of the time. It was going to be tough, but it was for the best. This lasted 6 months.
On December 3rd, 2023, I came home after being out for a few hours and found QWERTY struggling to breathe. She was panting even though she was remaining still and breathing with obvious effort. I'd seen this before in Chihuahuas experiencing congestive heart failure, and I knew that active congestive heart failure would kill a dog pretty fast. So I got her to my nearest emergency vet, which happened to be only a 2-minute drive from my house. They got her on oxygen right away, and for the next 3 days, she was hospitalized as she couldn't breathe on her own. They started to treat her for what they suspected was pneumonia, but also gave her medications to address a heart concern. She eventually responded to treatment, so the emergency room recommended a recheck with a cardiologist and released her to me. I had arranged to get her to a cardiologist in 2 weeks, which was the soonest I could afford, and I planned to keep her on the prescribed medications since she was doing okay. But 1 week later, she went into respiratory crisis again, and she was back at the ER for another 2 days. I left her a winter hat that smelled like me, and the nurse sent me photos of her laying on it in her kennel for comfort. The ER was able to arrange a cardiologist appointment to happen as soon as she could be safely released. I begged family and friends for money to help cover these ER and cardiologist costs, and if not for them, she would surely have been euthanized due to costs I couldn't cover. By now, I was close to $11,000 in debt for veterinary care due to these ER visits and specialist services. The cardiologist diagnosed QWERTY with pulmonary hypertension, which could be managed through medication, but the prognosis wasn't great. Her heart murmur was upgraded to 3 out of 5. I was told QWERTY's time left would be anywhere from a few months to a year and a half, and that I should be prepared for that eventuality. I was crushed. I felt it wasn't ideal to be apart from her during my long work days, given this diagnosis. What if she went into crisis when I was at work with a 45-minute drive back home? What if she went into crisis and I was at home and I couldn't afford to stabilize her? What if I came home from work one day and she was just gone? For the next 2 months, we spent time together and I settled into our new normal. When I drove to work in the mornings, I was comforted hearing the pings on my phone. These were notifications from the pet camera that QWERTY was snuffling around for the treats I'd left her, because it was sent to notify me anytime she moved. Most of the day was quiet and ping-free as she slept, but she sometimes rose to use her potty pad or sip some water. But every night on my drive home, QWERTY's pet camera pings would start about 30 minutes before my ETA because she sensed I was on my way, which caused her to get up from her bed and wait near my bedroom door for my return. The night of February 8th, 2024, there weren't any pings on my way home. I hadn't really noticed as I was singing my head off in traffic after a great day at work, excited to be on my way to my sweet QWERTY. I wasn't in a particular rush when I got out of the car and walked up the steps to the front door or made my way to the bedroom. I was expecting the usual routine: pick her up, plop her on the bed, kisses and bouncing the happy fits and burrowing on repeat. When I opened the door, she was waiting there but not wagging. I didn't stop to see what was wrong. I figured she was just tired, and I casually plopped her up on the bed as our tradition dictated, ready to commence with our special time. I got on my knees and knelt with my upper body covering her as she lay like a pancake on the bed, flattening out like she often did, letting me cover her with 100 kisses. Her tail slowly started to wag as she soaked up the attention, laying still instead of bouncing around like usual. I kissed her face and told her I loved her over and over, and I buried my face in her body, always careful not to actually put any of my weight on her, but just covering her like a human roof with my torso and arms. She always loved being under me because I think it made her feel completely safe, sheltered, loved. That was when she screamed, a loud, continuous, blood-curdling scream. I pulled her up from the bed as she continued to scream and stare at me. Then all at once, the screaming stopped and she completely collapsed, her head rolling off to one side, her tongue falling out of her mouth. I screamed her name and shook her to revive her, but she was totally limp, dead weight in my arms. She wasn't responsive and wasn't breathing. I continued to scream, "QWERTY, no," over and over at the top of my lungs through my tears as I raced with her out the door, down the steps, out to the car, and over to the emergency vet. I'll never forget how heavy she was in my arms, or the sight of her laying lifelessly in the seat next to me, her tongue protruding from her blank face. I was sure she was gone, but I had to try. The nurse collected her from me as I sobbed and tried to explain what happened. But to my surprise, when the nurse took her, she seemed to be breathing again. She was alert and looking at me like, "Mom, what happened? Why are you so worried?" The nurse took her to the back to check her vitals and get her on oxygen while they tried to figure out what had happened. I was taken to a private exam room where I called her papa, who was living 2 time zones away. At this point, I was now $14,000 in debt with emergency vet bills. I didn't know what I would do if the doctor came back to tell me we were looking at more hospitalization and tests. I had exhausted all lines of credit and support from family and friends. I was hoping for a miracle and that she would just pull through somehow. I was terrified that I would have to choose euthanasia because of cost concerns, a sad phenomenon known as economic euthanasia that many pet owners experience when they can't immediately afford life-saving vet care. The doctor came in so I could explain what happened. He said she was on oxygen and that they were about to start administering drugs and fluids. I can't say exactly what, because I was still in shock about what had happened. I couldn't process most of what he was saying, but he estimated it would cost around $4,000 to treat and stabilize her. I do remember that he said her prognosis still wouldn't be great after that, and that he couldn't guarantee this sort of episode wouldn't happen again. He then offered euthanasia as an alternative and said he would give me and her papa some time to discuss what we wanted to do. He left the room to check on her status, and I broke down. I couldn't believe it had come to this. Her papa and I talked it over for several minutes, realizing that the kindest thing was to let her go. We couldn't bear the thought of her experiencing an episode like that alone while I was at work. We couldn't risk her suffering a painful death by herself. But I also couldn't bring myself to say the words to the doctor. I didn't know how I would tell him that I wanted my baby to die. That's when the doctor came rushing back to the exam room. She's making the decision for us. You should come back to the treatment area now. As I said earlier, her death didn't go the way I'd expected it or hoped it would go at all. She didn't get the bucket list experience I had planned. She didn't pass away peacefully at home, but at a cold, uncomfortable clinic instead. Some of her last moments with me were filled with her screams, my screams of her name over and over, which couldn't have offered her comfort when she needed it. She didn't have her dog sisters with her. She didn't have her papa with her. She didn't even have a proper last meal, just her normal breakfast from 10 hours earlier in the day. She didn't fade into the sunset. She was ripped from the world. The doctor said that she was passing on her own. She had stopped responding to treatment and her body was shutting down. He said he could help her along with the euthanasia drugs. Seeing her there, so tired, unable to look at me, I could see that she deserved relief. She just couldn't fight anymore. I nodded yes to the doctor to let him know it was time to give her the gentle push she needed. He gently administered the drug and removed the oxygen mask from her snoot. He told me to take all the time I needed, and even though I was surrounded by vet staff rushing around and other pets in the room, and we had no privacy, they all went away. In those last minutes, it was only us. Somehow I was able to pull it together, to put on a brave face. I covered her with kisses while crying into her cheek, her shoulder, having to stand on my tiptoes to reach her in the oxygen cage. I tried my best to cover her body with my body, to make her feel held, to shield her from the cruel fluorescent lights and bustle of frantic activity behind me. I put her papa on speakerphone so he could say goodbye through his tears, and I sang to her the first song of many songs throughout her life I made up about her that went, "Quirty, quirty, quirty, quirt, 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 such a funny little squirt. She's my favorite little girl. She's the stinkiest girl in the whole wide world." I showered her with all the love and calming, soothing energy I could summon from inside of me as I stroked her and kissed her and felt her little spirit slip away. I looked in her eyes and she was not there. I held on to her a little longer while crying, sniffing her fur, touching her and kissing her face. I needed to take as much of the feeling of her with me as I could. I wanted my hands and nose and eyes and lips to memorize her, every last amazing and tiny and special little detail of her. I needed to make sure I would never forget the map of her funny little body. We communicate so much through touch with our animals, and it's our primary mode of expressing affection. Naturally, my body was already bracing for the inevitable withdrawal I would feel from her physical absence. I wanted to store it all up like a camel to get through the desert I now found myself in, thirsty for her companionship and touch, utterly lost without her. After I said goodbye to her body, I left QWERTY in the back room area to return to the exam room to handle cremation decisions with the nurse. I stopped in the lobby to wait for the nurse when I noticed that The TV, which was never once turned on during the last three times I'd been there, was on for a change. And on the TV of all the actors in the known universe was Wallace Shawn. It was the actor that we said was equivalent to QWERTY for years. We had said this. Here's Wallace Shawn and QWERTY. To her papa and me, it's always been Wallace Shawn equals QWERTY. And it wasn't just a flash or passing moment. He was in a long scene with another actor. I told her papa what was happening, and he couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my eyes either. What were the odds that he, of all actors, was the first image I saw after QWERTY died? I was sure in that moment that it was QWERTY trying to communicate with us. I felt like she was saying she was okay, that she was still here with us. I can't believe that was a coincidence. I wasn't looking for a sign when it happened. We'll end there. But as we mentioned, there's a lot more. And it's rich and incredibly poignant, and many people will gain from it. So if you have a chance to look at the Substack, that would probably be something that would be valuable for you. We want to thank Chandra enormously for sharing it.
Yes, it was a beautiful story. And again, like Ken said, there's so much more to it. But, you know, the whole process, right, of what QWERTY meant to her, you know, he was definitely her little heart dog. And how she went through the process, she made the best, even though QWERTY didn't die as she wanted. She made the best effort to be there and to snuggle with her and comfort her and love her until she slipped away.
We just don't have control over when they leave us. We don't have control over it. And, you know, it's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
We do have a few comments. Let me just see. So we have Sue saying, "This has made me cry, something I haven't done too much since my Hazel passed 2 weeks ago.
I've
been kind of numb. I hope you know how much I loved her. I hope she knew how much I loved her. I don't think I told her every day. I hope she knew."
Oh, I'm sure she knew.
I'm sure you told her in lots of ways that went beyond words.
Thank you, Sue. Hazel knows.
We have Prudence saying, "I miss the furious kisses too. What a sweet baby you had. I love the pictures of her little tongue poking out. Sorry that you two had to go through such pain. Dogs are such a gift. Their love immense."
Absolutely, Prudence. Thank you.
We have Mozzie's mom. "I feel that not being able to give her the last day you envisioned. I imagine you gave her so many beautiful ordinary days. She understood. So sorry for your loss." What a little sweetheart.
Thank you, Mozzie's mom.
And Alyssa writes, "It's very traumatizing seeing them like that. You did everything you could. She sounds like the best chihuahua in the world. I love Wallace. He's funny and comforting in Gossip Girl." That's probably where you saw her, I guess.
Thank you, Alyssa. That's good.
And then Alyssa also says, "Her last gift to you." So I have to say, this is very reminiscent of when my Isabel died.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Chandra and I have exchanged notes about this.
Yes, because you have little chihuahuas.
I got in the car and I turned on the radio, and right from the first note, the Rainbow Connection was playing. And that song is very close to my heart. And of course, the image of a rainbow and death and the Rainbow Bridge and all. It was quite remarkable. Right from there was nothing else. There was no other speaking or anything, just the first notes of that song. So I do, you know, we don't know how and why this happens, but it happens a lot, that there's these kinds of external
situations,
messages that are pretty unmistakable to us. So we wanted to give the whole time to Chandra and QWERTY because there's so much to this. And so we want to thank you, Chandra, so very much for sharing with us. And
thank also for you who have commented.
Thank you all for commenting, and have a good week. And if you haven't already, please do consider subscribing on YouTube, because we're close to that 1,000 mark, which is meaningful. And in any case, the more subscribers there are, the more likely people who would benefit from the program are going to find it. So thank you. So thank you to everybody who has subscribed. We really appreciate that. We see, we take a great deal of responsibility in knowing that the program is helpful to people.
And, yes.
And this is just a, it's just evidence of the value of the work that we're doing. And we just are so grateful for that.
Yes. Thank you so much.